Welcome back to the third hour of Issues Etc. Now, I had promised open lines in the third hour. Things have evolved a little bit since then to play upon our last hour's conversation. By the way, Andy called in the last hour, among others. I'd like Andy to call back if you would at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I'd like to send him absolutely free Ron Rhodes' latest book, The 10 Things You Should Know About Creation Versus Evolution Debate. Ron Rhodes, again, is the author. Andy, call us back, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. This last hour of the program, no open lines, as I said. Ed Meese, former U.S. Attorney General, is going to join us here in the first 25 minutes of the program, actually only about 10 minutes. He's a busy man, to talk about the federal marriage amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Then we will hear from the president himself in the entire statement that he made earlier today from the Roosevelt Room of the White House. We will hear the president basically calling for Congress to start the wheels turning on an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to prevent gay marriage. One important thing to note there, he's pretty clear that this amendment would not preclude the states coming up with their own solutions outside of marriage for same-sex couples, namely civil unions or same-sex unions. I want you to listen for that when we hear the president a little bit later. And then we will round off our conversation with Randy Thomason, Executive Director of Campaign for California Families, and we'll talk about gay marriage in San Francisco. That story continues to move forward as well. In between there, there's some time for your reaction, your questions, and your comments at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Ed Meese is a regular guest here on Issues Etc. He's former U.S. Attorney General of the United States. He is now chairman of the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies and Ronald Reagan Distinguished Fellow in the Public Policy for the Heritage Foundation, based in Washington, D.C. Ed, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
I want to thank you for your willingness to join us on short notice, too.
Well, this is an important topic, so I'm glad to be with you.
How do you respond? Already in the press, only hours after the president's official announcement of his support for a U.S. constitutional amendment and his call for the Congress to get busy with it, already this is being typified as a wedge issue that the president is using simply to solidify his base in advance of the November election. How do you react to that?
Well, I think that idea is totally false. Anyone who knows the president knows of his deep religious beliefs, and also knows that many people have turned to him, have called upon him to take action in view of what's going on in Massachusetts and in San Francisco. And so I think this is a genuine and a very well thought out response to an issue that he has not brought on this country, but other people who are attacking the culture of our country brought to being.
Why is an amendment to the Constitution, it is, if you will, the last resort legally that can be taken in our system of jurisprudence and of government? Why is an amendment to the U.S. Constitution necessary on this very issue of gay marriage?
Well, I think it may be necessary, and I think the president is correct in saying we should start considering it if it becomes necessary. Right now, we have the Defense of Marriage Act, which is a federal statute passed by Congress, and which says that marriage basically is one man and one woman, and that any law that is different from that does not deserve the full faith and credit of the other states. Let's say if Massachusetts goes through with their idea, just as Vermont when they created civil unions, there's a question whether then those under the Defense of Marriage Act, certainly if Massachusetts tried to create homosexual marriage, then the other states would not have to obey that. But what the president has recognized and what many others have recognized is that you're just one court decision away from some federal judge invalidating that statute. And that's why he wants to have the precautionary measure of a constitutional amendment available should that be needed.
Play this out for us, if you would, Ed. The whole... And the president mentioned it in today's announcement, the full faith and credit clause of the U.S. Constitution. Why is that so, and a right understanding of that part of our Constitution, crucial for understanding not only this debate, but what appears to be the first steps toward amending the Constitution?
Well, what our Constitution says is that every state shall give full faith and credit to the laws of the other states. And this is so that we don't have a hodgepodge of laws, and that when a law was passed in a particular state, nobody knows whether it could be enforced in another state. A good example would be divorce laws, for example. If a person got divorced in Massachusetts, if you didn't have the full faith and credit law, would they still be divorced in Vermont or in Georgia? And so it's the whole idea is that the other states, as being part of our union, owe deference to the laws of other states being applied on a nationwide basis. Now, what this means in terms of the particular cause that we're talking about today is Congress has said that because marriage is such an important institution, any attempt by a state to deviate from the traditional sense of marriage does not deserve full faith and credit. And this just stands to reason. But what we have seen is sometimes activist courts, particularly federal activist courts, have invalidated congressional statutes. And that's why it's important in as serious an issue as this to have an alternative means of taking care of this particular problem if a federal court should do that.
We're talking with former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, chairman of the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies and Ronald Reagan Distinguished Fellow in Public Policy at the Heritage Foundation based in Washington, D.C., about a federal marriage amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The bigger problem seems to be that judicial activism, Ed. It's not only the issue of marriage, but on many other issues, the courts, the judges, seem to be willing to overstep their bounds and legislate from the bench. What else can be done to curb judicial activism?
Well, the best thing, of course, is to appoint judges who understand their constitutional role and are willing to limit their actions to what the proper responsibility of a judge should be, which is to interpret the law, not to make up the law based on their own particular prejudices or policy preferences.
So in other words, getting the right people to elected office to do the right appointments.
That's exactly right. Now, at the present time, unfortunately, we have a minority in the Senate that is beholden to left-wing special interest groups that are trying to stop those kinds of judges from being appointed. We've had a number of those cases, and in at least two instances, the president has exercised his constitutional power to make a recess appointment when the Senate was out on recess. And so we have two very good judges, Judge Pickering and Judge Pryor, who are now on the bench, but they can only serve until next January. And so it's important that we end this filibuster, which has never been done before in the case of judges, so that we don't have a minority obstructing a vote. They know that if this came to a vote on the floor of the Senate, all of the president's nominations would be easily confirmed. And that's why they're using these extraordinary and very vicious tactics.
You have been watching this for a long time, both outside and inside the government itself. What is the mindset that seems to have infected the courts that will lead judges to simply act with impunity when it comes to an issue that they want to see advanced, even if, as in the case of Massachusetts, even if they seem to be acting against the express will, if not the legislative will, of the people in that state?
Well, you know, it's interesting because you've really put your finger on the whole problem here, the whole crux of the situation, and that is the special interest groups like the homosexual groups and others like that know they can't get their agenda through a legislature or a Congress that represents the will of the people, that's elected by the people. And that's why they go to these courts. They try to pick off a judge who is willing to be an activist, to in a sense violate his or her oath of office, and act as a super legislature instead of confining their role to what the Constitution says, that of a judge.
What would that role be? Just to get us all back with our feet firmly planted on firm constitutional ground, what is the proper role and limit of the judiciary in our system of government?
Well, the judge takes an oath to uphold the law, and as an interpreter of the law, he should interpret it as it's written, just as he would interpret the Constitution as it was written, and even originally, and of course even as it's been amended since that time. But you have to have as a foundation of a judge's ruling what the law actually says or what the Constitution actually says. And when judges instead substitute their own policy preferences or their own ideas, sometimes their own prejudices, for what the law says, then they are actually violating their oath And instead, they're stepping out of their role as judges and trying to make themselves super legislatures. And James Madison, way back in the 1780s, when he was talking about this, when the Constitution was being developed, said that when you combine legislative authority with judicial authority in the same person, that's the very definition of tyranny. And so what we have is a new form of judicial tyranny, actually, when judges do that.
What do you make, Ed, of the comparison that's often made nowadays between the issues of the civil rights era and that movement and the issues that are now facing our society when it comes to those who are calling for the approval of gay marriage state to state and across our country? How do you evaluate that comparison?
There's no validity whatsoever to that comparison. And many of my friends in the African-American community, many of my friends who, like I, have always stood for civil rights, are absolutely appalled that the homosexual special interests would try to make this comparison. Because, obviously, race is a benign characteristic, whereas what we're talking about here is conduct of what people do, and very different from the issue of any civil rights action.
Do you agree with those who are arguing that if we permit marriage to be redefined in this way by approving gay marriage per se, we are opening a door so that the term marriage can be redefined in any way anyone sees fit?
Absolutely. If you go away from traditional marriage, we're talking about something now that goes back as many thousands of years as the history of man has recorded. We're talking about an institution that always meant the union of one man and one woman. And if you destroy this traditional definition of marriage, you could have polygamy, you could have almost anything could follow from this idea that is trying now to be foisted on the American people. And I think it not only has very devastating social consequences, including what happens to children and all that sort of thing, but it really is, I think, a degradation of our society, such as we have never seen in this country.
Now, 38 states have passed some version of the Defense of Marriage Act. Ohio was the latest to do so and get its governor's signature on the law. What are the likelihood, with those kind of numbers at work, what is the likelihood, if a constitutional amendment actually is called for, what is the likelihood that we'll get this constitutional amendment?
Well, I think if it became clear that it was necessary, such as if a federal court did what I suggested and threw out our Defense of Marriage Act, the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, I think there is a very good possibility, perhaps even a probability, that such an amendment would, in fact, be passed by the Congress and would then be ratified by the necessary 34 states.
Finally, Ed, I know that you have some roots and background in the San Francisco Bay Area. I believe that your dad helped start a Lutheran congregation out there. Give us your take on what's taking place in San Francisco as we speak.
Well, it was actually my great-grandfather helped found the first Lutheran church in San Francisco, and I think he would be appalled at what's happening in his city where he did so much to create the community there. But I think that it is clearly a defiance of the law by the mayor and by the other officials involved, so much so that the state government, I understand, has refused to register those marriages in the official registry of marriages in the state. But what we have here are people just openly defying the law. They're very similar to those officials in the South in the unfortunate early days of the civil rights movement that refused to let minority students go to school and otherwise defied the law. It is absolutely the most despicable thing that a public official can do, which is to directly defy and disobey the law of the land passed by the people's representatives.
Folks, the website for the Heritage Foundation is heritage.org, heritage.org. Ed Meese, thanks again for being our guest.
Thank you. Good to be with you as always.
Ed Meese is former U.S. Attorney General. He's chairman of the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies and Ronald Reagan Distinguished Fellow in Public Policy for the Heritage Foundation, based in Washington, D.C. Earlier today, the president addressed this very issue. Let's hear what he had to say.
8 years ago, Congress passed and President Clinton signed the Defense of Marriage Act, which defined marriage for purposes of federal law as the legal union between one man and one woman as husband and wife. The act passed the House of Representatives by a vote of 342 to 67, and the Senate by a vote of 85 to 14. Those congressional votes and the passage of similar defense of marriage laws in 38 states express an overwhelming consensus in our country for protecting the institution of marriage. In recent months, however, some activist judges and local officials have made an aggressive attempt to redefine marriage. In Massachusetts, four judges on the highest court have indicated they will order the issuance of marriage licenses to applicants of the same gender in May of this year. In San Francisco, city officials have issued thousands of marriage licenses to people of the same gender, contrary to the California Family Code. That code, which clearly defines marriage as the union of a man and a woman, was approved overwhelmingly by the voters of California. A county in New Mexico has also issued marriage licenses to applicants of the same gender. And unless action is taken, we can expect more arbitrary court decisions, more litigation, more defiance of the law by local officials, all of which adds to uncertainty. After more than two centuries of American jurisprudence and millennia of human experience, a few judges and local authorities are presuming to change the most fundamental institution of civilization. Their actions have created confusion on an issue that requires clarity. On a matter of such importance, the voice of the people must be heard. Activist courts have left the people with one recourse. If we are to prevent the meaning of marriage from being changed forever, our nation must enact a constitutional amendment to protect marriage in America. Decisive and democratic action is needed, because attempts to redefine marriage in a single state or city could have serious consequences throughout the country. The Constitution says that full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts and records and judicial proceedings of every other state. Those who want to change the meaning of marriage will claim that this provision requires all states and cities to recognize same-sex marriages performed anywhere in America. Congress attempted to address this problem in the Defense of Marriage Act by declaring that no state must accept another state's definition of marriage. My administration will vigorously defend this act of Congress. Yet there is no assurance that the Defense of Marriage Act will not itself be struck down by activist courts. In that event, every state would be forced to recognize any relationship that judges in Boston or officials in San Francisco choose to call a marriage. Furthermore, even if the Defense of Marriage Act is upheld, the law does not protect marriage within any state or city. For all these reasons, the Defense of Marriage requires a constitutional amendment. An amendment to the Constitution is never to be undertaken lightly. The amendment process has addressed many serious matters of national concern, and the preservation of marriage rises to this level of national importance. The union of a man and woman is the most enduring human institution, honored and encouraged in all cultures and by every religious faith. Ages of experience have taught humanity that the commitment of a husband and wife to love and to serve one another promotes the welfare of children and the stability of society. Marriage cannot be severed from its cultural, religious, and natural roots without weakening the good influence of society. Government, by recognizing and protecting marriage, serves the interests of all. Today, I call upon the Congress to promptly pass and to send to the states for ratification an amendment to our Constitution defining and protecting marriage as the union of a man and woman as husband and wife. The amendment should fully protect marriage while leaving the state legislatures free to make their own choices in defining legal arrangements other than marriage. America is a free society, which limits the role of government in the lives of our citizens. This commitment of freedom, however, does not require the redefinition of one of our most basic social institutions. Our government should respect every person and protect the institution of marriage. There is no contradiction between these responsibilities. We should also conduct this difficult debate in a manner worthy of our country, without bitterness or anger. In all that lies ahead, let us match strong convictions with kindness and goodwill and decency. Thank you very much.
That's President George W. Bush delivering his announcement on his support for a constitutional amendment on the issue of gay marriage from the Roosevelt Room in the White House earlier today. Now, we know that many of you did not have opportunity to hear the president make that statement. So as many of you are back in your cars driving home, we decided we'd play the entire statement for you. Earlier in this hour, we heard from former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, his thoughts on the president's announcement. And when we come back from this break, we'll talk about what's going on in San Francisco on the issue of gay marriage. Of course, the story's been going on for a week and about 10 days now, where they've been issuing marriage licenses in San Francisco, people from out of state, people from out of the country coming to get married on the courthouse steps in San Francisco. It's even bled over into New Mexico as well over the weekend. Randy Thomason will join us on the other side of this break, Executive Director of Campaign for California Families. You've been reading about them in the papers as well. And then we invite your questions and your comments, your thoughts and your ideas on this issue for the remaining 10 minutes of Issues Etc. today when we conclude our conversation with Randy Thomason. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We've heard from the former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese. We heard from the president. When we come back, we'll hear from Randy Thomason. And then I want to hear from you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The final 25 minutes of Issues Etc. continues after this.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What is the key to understanding God's Word? How can you tell whether or not you're hearing God's Word rightly preached or taught? Is good preaching or teaching simply that which we find most interesting or entertaining? You'll find the answers to these questions in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, God's No and God's Yes, The Proper Distinction Between Law and Gospel. You can order the book by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can go online to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. Find out what you should be hearing when God's Word is preached and what's missing from so much preaching today. The book is called God's No and God's Yes. It's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February.
The giant sea louse, an evolutionary problem.
Answers with Ken Ham of the highly popular Answers in Genesis Conference. Well, Ken, what in the world is a giant sea louse? Or I guess it would be lice for plural.
Well, a giant species of sea lice has been discovered living on the seafloor. They're under half a mile of water off Australia's east coast. One was called Big Boy. You see, this crustacean is over a foot long. Now, sea lice are usually only about 3/4 of an inch long. But the scientists found this giant louse living off the dead creatures that fall to the bottom of the ocean. Now, here's the problem for evolutionists. They've unearthed fossils of this creature supposedly 80 million years old. Now that they found a living one, well, they were surprised to discover that this sea louse hasn't changed in 80 million years. Of course, creationists insist that the 80 million years never existed. You know, evolutionists make discoveries like this all the time of living things that are little or no different to fossils claimed to be millions of years old. They haven't changed much at all. This, of course, supports the Genesis account of creation, not evolution.
We hold hundreds of faith-building Answers in Genesis meetings each year, including this summer's Creation College, 5 days of in-depth study to equip pastors, teachers, and Bible lecturers. Go to our website, answersradio.com, to find a meeting that might be coming to your area. Also, look at some of the free booklets there that you can download. It's a free service of answersradio.com.
This is Dr. John Tape with the Media Minute. Have you ever watched a movie and noticed how brand names are clearly seen? You may hear characters request a certain soft drink or mention the specific name of their shampoo. That is called product placement, and companies pay thousands of dollars to have their product seen on the screen. Don't let your children be fooled by that. Help them to recognize that an ad is an ad, even if it takes place in the middle of a show. And just because the hero brushes with a certain kind of toothpaste, that is no guarantee it will make anyone's smile brighter. Jesus loves your children very much, enough to die on the cross for them. He does not want them to be misled or tricked by deceptive ads. Help your children to recognize product placement ads when they see them. This Media Minute is brought to you by the Christian Media Literacy Institute at www.cmli.org.
Marriage without commitment will not succeed.
Kids, we feel, are different at birth.
The best way to improve your sex life might be to go help your wife with the dishes.
You can build a stable relationship.
I believe the wisdom comes from the scriptures, and it's been
solid there. Words of guidance and encouragement from Dr. James Dobson on Focus on the Family. Heard weekdays right here.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Tomorrow on the program, we'll get Uwe Simonetto's review of Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion of the Christ. He was able to see that today or yesterday, and Uwe brings us so many things from the world of religion, being religion editor for United Press International. We'll get his take on this film. I know he's been anxiously awaiting it. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. Now, before we get on to our conversation with Randy Thomason about gay marriage in San Francisco and your thoughts and your ideas, when that conversation concludes, let me tell you about our Issues Etc. book of the month for February. As February winds down, it's always a short month, and even though we got that extra day this year, it's still not a long month. The book is called God's No and God's Yes, the proper distinction between law and gospel. People listen to this program, they say, wow, I've never heard anything like this on Christian radio. And if you've been listening in the last 3 hours, maybe you've been saying the same thing as well. What makes Lutheran theology distinctive among other Christian theologies? One of those things is the ideas found in this book, God's No and God's Yes, the proper distinction between law and gospel, rightly handling God's word of truth by understanding the difference between law and gospel. The book is $9.99 plus shipping and handling. You can call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours and simply ask for the book, God's No and God's Yes, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or visit them at one of their two locations here in St. Louis, 3558 South Jefferson, 3558 South Jefferson, or here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. They also have a bookstore. You can also browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section of the website. You will find information on God's No and God's Yes, 1-800-325-3040, or issuesetc.org. When you call, when you write, when you go in, make sure you mention issues, etc. Randy Thomason is our guest for the next 10 minutes. We'll talk about gay marriage in San Francisco. He's Executive Director of Campaign for California Families. Randy, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Todd, it's good to be with you and your listeners.
Your best estimate on the number of couples that have received marriage licenses through the courthouse in San Francisco in the last 10 days?
Homosexual couples numbering about 3,200 have received counterfeit marriage licenses. Of course, this is unlawful, according to the state of California, and it is not a moral thing to do.
I was watching the news the other day, and they were showing some sort of a clerk, a clerical worker in the San Francisco court building, running these documents through the proper printing process in order to get the names and the registration on them. You say they're counterfeit marriage licenses. Make your case.
California law is very clear. In several parts of the family code and the penal code, it says marriage can only be for a man and a woman. It is actually against the law for this to be done in San Francisco. It also violates constitutional provisions that say counties have to follow state law. And it trashes the vote of the people of California, who said 4 years ago that marriage is only for a man and a woman. The people made law statewide. San Francisco has no right at all, no authority to do what it's doing. And we held a news conference today in our state capitol to call upon our Attorney General Bill Lockyer to do his job to enforce the law. He's derelict of duty. He's sitting on his hands.
Hasn't the governor, Governor Schwarzenegger, called upon the Attorney General to do something as well recently?
Yes. But, see, the Attorney General is a very liberal former San Francisco Bay Area state senator. It was in 1996 that Bill Lockyer personally killed a protection of marriage bill. And now he's the state attorney general. He likes homosexual marriage. He doesn't like to enforce the law here. But under significant pressure, he is sort of passing the buck to our state Supreme Court, says he'll go there Friday to try to get them to decide whether homosexual marriage is constitutional or not. Of course, that's letting the wolf guard the hen house. This is not a good direction. We don't know where it's going to go. So today we held a news conference with our former Attorney General, Dan Lundgren, who supports protecting marriage strongly and called upon Bill Lockyer to do his job.
Now, this is the situation you find yourselves in California. 38 other states have a version of the Protection or the Defense of Marriage Act on the books, Ohio being the latest. What is to stop any other mayor of any other town from doing precisely as Mayor Gavin Newsom has done in San Francisco in violation of state law and issue in his town, wherever it may be, his own bogus marriage licenses to same-sex couples?
I suppose it's like asking, what do we do to stop cults? Well, you answer a lie with the truth, and you provide evidence of the truth. And that is on a personal debate basis. However, legally, I am very much in favor of what are called super domas. This is where state law does not just say, okay, marriage is for a man and a woman. But it's very specific so that corrupt judges and judicial activists don't play around with undermining marriage. I believe laws should say the rights and privileges of marriage are only for a man and woman, a husband and wife. And that way you don't have the liberals say, hey, you're just protecting the word marriage. We're going to take the rights and essence of marriage and give it to domestic partnerships or civil unions. That leads us to talking about what President Bush is talking about today. I think we need a really true blue federal marriage amendment to protect marriage, not just one protecting the word marriage.
Now, the one that the president said he would get behind today in his announcement is being submitted by Representative Marilyn Musgrave, Republican of Colorado, that would basically guard the term marriage from the whole gay marriage situation. But the president was very clear this morning in his announcement that the states would still, under this proposed constitutional amendment, still have the latitude to come up with other arrangements, namely same-sex unions or civil unions. Your thoughts on that?
What are we fighting for? We're fighting to protect marriage. If we do lip service on marriage and say, hey, let's protect the word and the ceremony for a man and a woman, but allow homosexual marriage by another name, civil unions or domestic partnerships in all 50 states, it's self-defeating. The reason we don't have a true blue amendment right now is because too many pro-family organizations have been asking the president and the Republicans in Congress, what will you accept as far as an amendment? That's the wrong question. You need to go into politicians and say, this is what we want you to do. Because politicians always find the road of least resistance. So the fight has not been strong enough, and we actually need to have a true blue marriage amendment. We're supporting the institution of marriage amendment, which is supported by Concerned Women for America, the nation's largest pro-family women's organization. It reads simply, quote, marriage in the United States shall consist only of the union of a man and a woman. Neither the United States nor any state shall recognize or grant to any unmarried person the legal rights or status of a spouse. You notice in there it says states can't give away the rights of marriage. And California's experience proves this out, Todd. We're all appalled with what's happening in San Francisco. They're actually issuing full-blown homosexual marriage licenses. But do Americans know California's past? California, last year, the Governor Gray Davis and the Democrat-controlled state legislature passed a bill called AB 205, which awarded all the rights of marriage under California law to homosexual domestic partners. And they said, oh, this isn't homosexual marriage. This isn't gay marriage. Well, of course it was, but they just call it something different, domestic partnerships. So domestic partnerships, civil unions, are gay marriage by another name to fully protect marriage, and that was the intention of the president, as he said in his speech today. We need to fully protect marriage. We can't do it with the Musgrave plan because even with good intentions, we've got to protect all the rights of marriage.
And in New Mexico over the weekend, in a town just north of Albuquerque, if I'm not mistaken, there were also gay marriage licenses being issued there and a few ceremonies being performed. Can we expect the 3,200 plus people who've received California marriage licenses to take them elsewhere to the various states and challenge their state's laws?
Well, Lawsuit City is on the way unless California's pro-family citizens and pro-family citizens nationwide get involved and help in the California fight. We're really trying to protect America from California. That's our battle plan. And, you know, with God's help, we're asking his blessing in this because he created marriage for a man and woman. We all know that. We're directing people to our website, SaveCalifornia.com, to send emails to our state legislators saying protect marriage for a man and a woman, and we're asking people to donate to help our cause. We have partnered with the Liberty Council, a religious freedom, marriage protection legal organization out of Florida, and we're in court, but we're holding news conferences, we're doing lots of media, we're putting on the pressure to protect marriage because this is the foundation of family.
Randy Thomason, thank you for being our guest on Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd, keep up the good work. I've enjoyed being with you today.
Thank you. Folks, you can stay updated on the issue of gay marriage by checking out the website for Campaign for California Families, Campaign for California Families, at their website. It's SaveCalifornia.com, SaveCalifornia.com. Randy Thomason is an executive director of Campaign for California Families. Well, you've heard from Ed Meese. You've heard from the president, his statement. We replayed it for you right before the break. Now you've heard from those who are on the ground in San Francisco, in California. I want to hear from you on this issue. Are you satisfied with what President Bush says he will support being an amendment that would define marriage as a man and a woman, but would still allow the various states to come up with other arrangements? Same-sex unions, civil unions, the kind of things that are being practiced in, say, Vermont, for instance. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. 15 minutes left for your questions, your comments, and your ideas. I'd like your reaction to the president's statement today. He said he'll stand up for, and he called for, Congress to begin working toward an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Folks, if nothing else, this is historic. This is historic. I was thinking today, though, you know, these things have a way of, if you remember the Equal Rights Amendment, kind of bobbing around on the surface for a long time and then eventually dying a slow death. Do you expect an amendment to become a reality? If so, is the one being proposed by the president that he says he will be willing to back, at least at this point in time, is it sufficient? Randy Thomason, we just got off the phone with him. He said, no, not really. The Musgrave proposal that would still allow states to put forth same-sex unions is not sufficient. We've got to go the whole way. A same-sex union, he said, would be a gay marriage by simply another name. Do you agree or disagree? Is it the best we can do? The best we can do is simply safeguard the term marriage. We can't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. If we can simply get our finger into this hole in the dike, we'll have to worry about the other holes in the dike a little later. What do you think? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Your questions, your comments. I guess, put it this way, is it a compromise? Has the president entered into what is essentially a fatal compromise on this issue if he allows civil unions in the states but supports an amendment to the U.S. Constitution outlawing gay marriage, just the term marriage? Will this be a major issue in the upcoming presidential election? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. How important is this? I hear people talking about it all over the place. You know what I've heard the most? I've heard people say, and this seems to be kind of the libertarian view, you know, I'm not really for gay marriage. I think it's a bad idea generally, and I think it probably will have a bad effect all around in our society for a number of reasons. But to go so far as to outlaw it, I can't see that. I can't see that. Is that your viewpoint? According to USA Today, this is their story on the president's statement earlier today that we played for you, saying that decisive and democratic action is needed. President Bush on Tuesday backed a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage in an attempt to halt same-sex unions like thousands that have been allowed this month in San Francisco. We're talking about upward of 3,000 marriage licenses issued. Now, remember, a lot of those licenses have not been acted upon. The people who got them simply got them, went back to their home states, and maybe they'll try and act upon them there. Another challenge to that state's laws. Bush made the announcement in a short appearance Tuesday morning at the White House, saying that current federal law was inadequate to assure the public's will on the matter. Bush said a constitutional amendment was necessary. Now, let's make it clear. The president was not saying that the Defense of Marriage Act was inadequate. He said having a law was inadequate, given the fact that people are more than willing, as is evidenced in San Francisco, to simply ignore such laws. You need something bigger. You need something better. You need the last line of defense, the final refuge that we take in our system of government, a constitutional amendment. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. To the phones, Larry is calling from his car. Larry, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, thank you. I guess my question goes to the larger issue, not just to the gay rights issue, but just to the fact that are we really going to have to legislatively buttress all of the moral laws? Last year it was, I guess, in Illinois, they tried to put through a law creating a law that said that preaching in church against gay rights is hate speech. And, you know, I see this chiseling, you know, by the devil going on all over, and I'm really concerned, you know, that we really have to do this at all in the first place.
Yeah, I share that concern, Larry. I share it completely. Thank you for the call.
The other thing about this is, you know, and I hear from the other side, and this is almost laughable, from a morning talk radio station the other morning, and this is an indirect quote, she said, I refuse to acknowledge the moral dictates of someone's invisible friend, referring to God, I guess.
Interesting. Apparently the speaker has no problem acknowledging the moral dictates of themselves. But someone's invisible friend, that's an interesting way of referring to God. Fine. I mean, if you want to call him an invisible friend. Well, okay, Larry has two good points. First of all, we can't go amending the Constitution every time we have judicial activism rearing its ugly head. And this will not be the only issue upon which judges will feel free to rewrite the law at will. This is just one. It is a symptom of a bigger problem. The bigger problem being judicial activism, the symptom being the whole gay marriage thing. And it's not just the judges. Remember, what's happening in San Francisco is not the actions of a judge. It's the actions of an elected official and those who work for him, the mayor of San Francisco. So it's not just that. It is sad that we even have to do this, that we have to resort to amending the Constitution. The Constitution was designed to be amended, no doubt about that. There's an entire clause in there, an entire article in there about how to amend the thing. It was designed to be amended. It has been amended many times to its betterment. I think, for instance, of, say, the first 10 amendments, we call them the Bill of Rights. Some pretty good things there. So it's a good thing to amend the Constitution when necessary, right? Good. But it was also made quite difficult to achieve because the framers of the Constitution did not anticipate having to do it that often. And I wonder whether or not they ever anticipated having to do it to stop people from basically just breaking laws on the books. What they anticipated was, if you don't like a law, challenge it, take it up to the Supreme Court, let the Supreme Court decide whether it squares with the Constitution, and then live with the results. What they never could have anticipated, I'm certain, is that people would simply, well, they could have anticipated it, but I don't think they put the amendment clause in the Constitution for this purpose, was having to amend the Constitution because people just won't obey the laws. Here's a big question we might want to answer before we get to amending the Constitution. If people won't obey a law in their states saying that marriage is a man and a woman, do you think they're really going to obey the Constitution that says marriage is between a man and a woman? Do you? I don't think so. I don't think so. Linda's calling from her car. Linda, thanks for waiting. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi.
Hi, Linda.
I was just wondering if this bill passes and the Constitution is amended, you know, common law marriages is between a man and a woman. For whatever reason that they choose not to have the ceremony, that's their personal business. But if this goes through, it's going to give a legal right to gays, but not to a man and a woman who choose to spend their life together without the legal piece of paper. Where does that leave them?
Now, I hope you're understanding the situation correctly here, Linda. The amendment to the Constitution would not legalize gay marriage. It would prohibit gay marriage.
I understand that. But it leaves it up to the state to choose another way to word it or whatever.
Well, yes, you're right. At least this version, the Musgrave version the president made reference to today, would do exactly that, leave it up to the state to kind of make up their own minds, as long as they don't call it marriage. As long as they don't call it marriage.
Okay, well, they have made common law marriage, or whatever word you want to use for that, they've made that illegal in several states for a number of years.
Linda, thank you for the call. I understand her point about the common law marriage. Well, but I shared a story with you last week, or was it last week or the week before? Already in, I'm trying to remember where this was, up in the Northwest, one of those states up there, a lesbian couple. Remember I read the story to you? A lesbian couple who'd been together for about 10 years, separated. A physician and a nurse. The physician, she obviously had a lot of money and a lot of property that they'd shared for 10 years. The nurse sued her former lesbian lover of 10 years for an equal division of the property. House, cars, you name it, whatever it was. A judge, hearing their case, said their relationship was not marriage, but it was sufficiently marriage-like. That was the term he used, marriage-like. Sufficiently marriage-like for an equal distribution of property statute, or what they referred to as a standard, to be put in place. And he divided the property among the two. He said you weren't married, but your relationship was enough like a marriage that now that you're separated, not divorced, I will divide the property among you in equal shares. Ironically, the physician, the one with the most to lose in this, what do you call it, divorce, separation? I don't even know what to call it, has appealed the case on the basis of the fact that this whole standard of distributing property doesn't apply to their relationship, to a gay relationship, but only to men and women either in recognized heterosexual marriages or common law marriages. You see, that was the case that was made by the nurse in the case. She said, look, we are essentially a common law couple. And if it were a man and a woman who'd been living together for 10 years and sharing rent and income and all those kind of things, and one wanted to sue the other at a separation for equal distribution of the property, you'd distribute the property between the two of them, wouldn't you? And the judge said, yes, I would. And your relationship appears to be equally or sufficiently marriage-like for me to do the same for you. You see, that horse has also left the barn, at least up in that northwestern state. This is a can of worms, folks. It's a huge can of worms. What do you do with the whole concept of common law relationships? The whole point of a common law relationship is, while there is no legal recognition, never has been, of the relationship has sufficient longevity and stability that when it dissolves, some legal action needs to be taken. That's the whole point. If I am called in to testify against my wife and my girlfriend, we've been living together for 10 years, I could say, you can't require me to testify against my spouse, and they'd say, she's not your spouse, and I'd say, well, for all intents and purposes, she is. We should tread so lightly. I am generally in favor of stopping gay marriage. I hope you realize that. Also, same-sex unions. I don't have time to go on all the reasons with only 45 seconds left here, but boy, should we tread lightly. Better not to amend the Constitution and deal with this as is than to amend the Constitution in such a way so that we allow gay marriage under another name, which is precisely what the Musgrave Amendment would do. Tomorrow on the program, Uwe Simonetto joins us. We're going to be talking to him about the movie, The Passion of the Christ. He had opportunity to see it. He's religion editor for United Press International. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.